afternoon. The Committee on Audit will come to order. Clerk will call a roll.
Senator Coles.
Here.
Senator Darling. Senator Lozick.
Here.
Senator Vinehout.
Here.
Senator Lehman.
Here.
Representative Kirkman.
Here.
Representative Markline.
Here.
Representative Nygren.
Here.
Representative Richards.
Here.
Representative Sargent.
Here.
Okay. Hearing an session on the proposed audit of the child placing agencies licensed by the Department of Children and Families, and we'll also attempt to introduce and have a public hearing relating to the authority and responsibility of the Audit Bureau and State Auditor eliminating certain audit requirements and requiring confidentiality during investigations of reports made to the State Fraud, Waste, and Mismanagement Hotline. So two items up today. Just want to remind anybody in the audience wishing to testify on either item to fill out a hearing slip. The paid staff over here can give it to you if there is anyone wishing to testify. We have a scope memo on the potential audit for the first item up today. And I just want to make a few introductory remarks, then we'll bring Joe Christman up. Imagine you want to make some, also Sam. But, you know, this came to my attention two Fridays ago through a whistleblower, quite frankly. And, you know, I was as shocked as I'm sure all of the rest of you are about the $6 million of taxpayer money taken for personal gain. It's true that the audit, which was internal to DCF, was completed last month and highlighted public funds that were used for substantial unallowable costs, but we have to go a little bit deeper here. And this is not meant to be any insult to the agency, but it's our job as essentially the financial oversight entity, as legislators, and especially on the audit bureau, we have to dig a little deeper to make sure there aren't more substantial problems going on in this situation. And that's why we are here today. So we'll get the final answers when Auditor Christman finishes his audit, whenever that is. But with that, Co-Chair Kirkman might have a couple remarks.
Yes, thank you, Senator. And it's one of these things that I've spent a lot of time working on the foster care system over the last 2 years. And this summer, I chaired a special committee with regards to foster care. And when I heard about the money that was misused in the program, I thought of so many better uses for that $6 million. And it really made me angry because I know there's a whole bunch of kids out there, about 6,000, that are in the foster care system. And I want to make sure that that this is not happening around the state. And the only way to do that is to really go in and have a complete look through of how, you know, the foster care system is funded. For those that don't know, it's a state-run program, and in Wisconsin, it's run through the counties. There are other states like Washington State, for instance, it's a state-run program completely. And so I really want to get to the bottom of this, and so that we can make sure that money isn't going out the door that shouldn't be, and it's going to the right places. And when it's a county-run system, the county then contracts with these local providers. And we have a number of places in state government where, you know, the county is acts on behalf of the state and then contracts out with these local providers. So, again, trying to figure out how this all happened, I think, is critical. So it's not happening in other areas, not just foster care, but in other areas of state government. So, again, I'm looking forward to this discussion today and going forward that we can really get a better handle on how these dollars went out the door without folks knowing. So, again, thank you, Senator, for bringing this forward. I know Senator Vukmir is behind us as well, and she's been very active in this in the last couple of weeks as well, and others. Thanks.
Is there anybody on the committee? Excuse me. Anyone else on the committee want to make some introductory remarks? Okay. Auditor Christman, you're on deck.
All
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Coles, Co-Chair Kirkman, and committee members. My name is Joe Christman. I am the State Auditor and Director of the Nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau. At your seats before you today, you have a memorandum from me dated February 15th that outlines a proposed scope for the audit that's before you for deliberation today. And as is our practice, I'll zero in on the bullet points in the memo to just talk about how we might begin this effort. So if your will today is to direct us to undertake this effort, we'll focus in these following areas. We'll take a look at financial oversight in general, but also at DCF's efforts to ensure that child placing agencies operate in accordance with licensure and other requirements. We'll take a look at the actions taken by DCF in instances in which there have been violations to that licensure or other requirements. We'll also take a look at the flow of funding and follow that flow of funding to the child placing agencies and consider how they were spent. And to that end, the last point in the bullet is probably the one that resonates with you the most in this way, to take a look at a sample of those child placing agencies and review some expenditures and study whether they were reasonable and appropriate. So in a very brief statement, that is what we would propose to do. And with that, I'm joined by Paul Stieber, the Deputy State Auditor for Program Evaluation, and we'd be happy to respond to your questions.
Co-Chair Kirkman.
Thank you, Joe. And I just, for clarification, and I know that the agency is out there auditing some of these child placement agencies now. How will you work with them and so that there isn't a duplication of auditing resources? Because I think that there's plenty of places to audit around myself and how you do work and your shop operates. So
certainly, this is not the only effort we would undertake where there are multiple activities happening at once. The committee will even remember at its last hearing it heard from the University of Wisconsin system, which was also pursuing its own examination of issues that came up before you at that time as well. In this particular case, that fourth dot that looks at a sampling of child placing agencies, we would use a variety of factors to determine which of those agencies we would consider as part of our review, and certainly one of those would be to get more information than I possess today on the department's current strategy and where they are spending time at those agencies to conduct that audit review. So those would be factors we would take into consideration.
And one other follow-up, just, you know, again, several of us were on the committee when we did the child care shares audit as well, and I think the agency was out trying to investigate as they got word on different potential fraud areas as well, and you worked hand-in-hand with these Department of Children and Families at that time, too.
Certainly. The audit process is defined by its objectivity and independence, and that's certainly true as the external auditor. That's something that we bring to the table, but it also is characterized by the word cooperation. You've heard me use that before when we've been at audit committee hearings, and so we would be looking to cooperate with the department and certainly expecting their cooperation with us in our effort.
Auditor Christman, time frame. Are we looking, is this one of these six-month audits, or is this one you can get done in 3 months? Give me an idea on that.
Thank you. This is always the question that is of greatest interest to you as a committee, and I always come up with
one of them
to artfully not answer it as best I can. The word that we've...
You don't have to. I'm, you know, just because, you know, I'm chair, you can blow me off.
I would certainly not presume to do so. I think
matter.
That we've gotten in the habit of using words like small, medium, and large. This, in our framework here in this memo to you, I would characterize as a medium-sized audit effort. The place where it will grow is really with respect to what we find once we begin that local agency work. And that's the most difficult for us to answer now, but it would have the greatest impact on the timing consideration.
How would your activities dovetail with the Justice Department, which is apparently involved now?
That too is difficult to know exactly. I'm not sure at this point what the nature of the involvement would be and how that would fit together. But
I mean, in the past, I'm pretty sure that in the past, when Jan Mueller was audit chair, if she found something, she didn't wait to talk to the co-chairs. She handed it straight to the Justice Department.
There are many.
That's part of your duties. I mean, right. There's no hesitation in regard to that.
Certainly. And part of our responsibility is to keep you informed, of course, but the idea that we would be looking as comprehensively as possible, and we have a very good relationship established with
them. Well, I mean, the Justice Department, we believe, is going after this particular foster care agency. But if you found another one that was doing something wrong, you know, it just...
Right. It would really depend on the nature of the particular
right.
findings.
Right. Other questions? course, Senator Vinehout always has very pointed questions.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. When I read through the scope, I began to wonder, like many of us, how could this have possibly have happened without anyone knowing about it? And one of the first questions I had in my mind was, what is the system right now to prevent such a thing from happening? So I'm wondering, when you think about the scope, how, and if you can fit in the idea of the current structure, changes in the structure, existing methods of oversight, maybe even to the point if there seems to be problems, how maybe other states have provided that oversight. Particularly, I'm thinking about issues related to the process, the way we do things in Wisconsin. What went wrong and why did it go wrong?
Did you want to, that's just a comment?
Well, I'm asking if this can fit in.
Certainly, if it's the committee's will that we consider that, we certainly would do so. As drafted in the scope, it's a good reminder, too, to put in front of the committee. The scope represents what would be the floor and not the ceiling of the audit effort. So talking about a focus on financial oversight would certainly be inclusive of process-related questions, even if not particularly enumerated in the scope.
But I'm thinking about the structure also, the way that the agency works, its role, what it does, how it interacts with the foster care placements that they make, how it interacts with the state, the information that goes back and forth, as well as the dollars. Because when I read the audit, I think there's a clear focus on dollars, and certainly dollars lead us to process. And I'm just wanting to make sure that we have on the to-do list an analysis that clearly describes the structure and the process.
Senator Vinehout, what I hear you saying is, in my terms, characterized by a how question.
Yes.
In addition to a what question, which
and
may be what
and maybe that would lead us to why this happened. Yeah. And of course, the second part is, how do we prevent it from ever happening again?
Senator Vinehout, this is the same thing that my reaction when this thing first popped up. Now, I think point one may cover it, but mm-hmm. what Senator Vinehout is saying is a little more explicit. So I mean that's the essence of why I was pursuing this audit.
Because if there's Chairman.
That's fine.
Well, if there's something wrong, you say in accordance with the licensure and other requirements, but if there's something wrong about the process that we have, we need to fix it. Mm-hmm. So it's not only in accordance with the existing statutes and licensure and procedures and administrative rules, but also how If they were in accordance and then this happened, then there's something clearly wrong with the system. And I think that's what really led us to fix the problems with Wisconsin Chairs Program. And certainly I think everybody here is interested in fixing this problem.
Representative Marklein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. I'd also like to just follow up with Senator Vinehout's concerns and make sure that we have a clear understanding of the scope. And you know, it appears that in the one agency in question, that the bulk of the alleged losses occurred in 2009, which is a number of years ago. And so not only do I want to know, how this happened, but has anything changed in the agency? Any processes changed from then until now? And if they haven't, what policies, what changes need to be necessary to make sure this never happens again? Because, you know, and as I've shared with you, you know, we've got a whole process in place here. Somewhere along the line, there was a failure. And we've got to identify that failure and make sure that we correct that.
Okay. Senator Darling.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Well, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but I just want to give us a little bit of history on this issue, because as co-chair of finance on and off for the last several years, I have always been very concerned about the lack of effort put into fraud detection, abuse, and prosecution. And and brought it up when we were in the minority. I'm not trying to be partisan here. I'm just trying to give a little history. We brought it up many times about how much money dedicated to fraud and abuse was taken out of the budget. And in fact, I asked for a paper on that and can share it with you. Well, then when the governor came, so there wasn't money at the county level or at the state level enough money put into auditors who could look at program integrity and evaluate it. And there wasn't the link to district attorneys who in many cases we were told in that ledge council on program integrity that these district attorneys were overwhelmed with dealing with crime issues and they really did not have the resources to deal with fraud and abuse. And so we worked on some strategies which we didn't put forward, but I am working on a bill right now that's going to be looking at that issue. And I think the question we have to ask ourselves eventually is how much money is put into fraud and abuse, how many auditors are there that used to be there, and what should be our role. And my clear opinion is we don't put enough resources into fraud and abuse. In fact, one individual from the Department of Families and Children then came in and testified to us about all question mark allocations that the department really didn't have the resources to dig into. I mean, she went over a scenario that was really quite shocking, the amount of abuse and fraud that could be, I mean, financial fraud that could be on the tables. So then the governor started a commission on fraud and abuse, and they established one individual for the Department of Health. And I don't think that person is covering the Department of Families too right now. But that person found with the Department of Health, for every dollar that department put into fraud detection and prosecution, they got $23 back. And this woman in the Department of Families showed us where lots of these pockets were. So the reason I bring it up is we have to put more effort and financial effort into the agencies for auditing program integrity, fraud and abuse, because there is some effort into providers in health, in Medicaid, but there isn't enough into recipient fraud. And, you know, Mr. Co-Chair, you and I are working on a bill and we'll put it forward, but there's so much more we've got to do. And I just can't tell you, this was in 2009, and this is when we were having our ledge council, where we just said, boy, so much effort in fraud and abuse has been taken out of the budgets, and we get what we pay for, you know? So I'm just going to end on that note and say, I think we have to be program integrity, if it's you know, on fraud and abuse from recipient point of view and provider point of view, we really have to sink more effort into it. And I'm not trying to defend the department, but I know that when we heard testimony from someone in that agency, I'm not going to name names, it was appalling what they think we could find, but they didn't have the resources to go after it. I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying the legislature and the administration of that time took out millions of dollars in fraud detection and abuse and prosecution.
Besides, Senator Darling, besides the bill that Alberta and I are working on, the next item on our agenda, I think, relates to your concern. I mean, this committee is, in a way, a fraud and abuse committee. I mean, we're dealing with these various things all the time. Can we do everything? No. We'd like to do more, which is why that next bill is up, because we want to thin things out and focus your time on some more important things. But anyhow, did you have any comments on that?
No, thank you.
Okay. Representative Sargent is first.
Thank you, Chairman. I really want to commend the agency. It's my understanding that they brought this forward, and I think that's a good sense of what the state is doing, watching out for our taxpayer dollars. I am glad that we are going to be looking for some accountability with this. This is something that's very important to me, and as a freshman, I'm honored to be on this committee as a small business owner and focusing on accountability. I'm hoping that we continue to look at accountability when we're thinking about our taxpayer dollars. One of the things I'm concerned about, for example, is voucher schools, and I look forward to that continued conversation. Misuse of taxpayer dollars is something that's very important to all of us in this room. I am aware of that, and especially when we're working with private agencies, we have a little less control, and we need to hold those people accountable. I'm not sure how many of you are aware of this, but I am on the Dane County Board, and I am the chairwoman of the Health and Human Needs Committee, so I am deeply knowledgeable with making sure that we are taking care of our vulnerable populations, and the children are definitely one of the folks that I am most concerned about. And I think that it's important that we make sure that our taxpayer dollars are being spent for those vulnerable citizens as opposed to personal gain for people that may not be thinking about the people that we as government are here to take care of. So I know that there are multiple agencies out there, I'm getting to my question, that are multiple agencies that are out there that different counties can contract with. And one of the things I would like you to consider when you're looking at bullet point four with the funds, which programs are we going to be looking at, is looking at counties that have decided not to work with this agency or agencies like them. Maybe they did work with them at one point in time and they've decided not to. What caused them to make that decision? Why have they chosen other agencies? I think oftentimes we can learn from the local communities on that. Thank you.
I think that's a good item to throw on your list, Joe. Senator Lozick.
Thank you, Chairs. Mine dovetails too off of the co-chair's comments and Senator Vinehout and Senator Darling. Representative Sargent also with the compliments to the department for discovering this and taking the steps that they've taken on it. My question is, as the department is auditing it and you're going to be auditing it, and we talk about all of the audits we would like to do and all of the fraud that's potentially out there and we'd like to get at that, my question is, the auditors over at the department that are doing the auditing and your auditors doing the auditing, is it the same do you have the same standards? We talk about gap accounting standards, auditors, the same training, the same standards, and how will you be not duplicating, or how does that work in our best interest versus maybe sending you on to some other place that we might suspect there's some fraud or abuse?
Thank you, Senator Lozick, for the question. I think that the message would be that we would be intentional about how we would move forward with the audit effort, to be mindful of duplication. And certainly the questions that we would need to ask in order to provide answers to how and what and why would be informed not only by those agency reviews, but also by the systemic look overall, not only at what the department's doing, but also what we're doing. And we'll just try to be as mindful as we can about not duplicating effort as part of that step forward.
Okay, but the auditors that are in the department are of the same same background, same caliber, same standards that your auditors are. Is there a little bit of difference in agency auditors versus the state auditing staff?
I may have to defer the question about the particular backgrounds of the DCF staff to the secretary to address in her testimony to you. But okay. In terms of the comparability, the audit function would be similar. But I can't speak to the qualification question.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Other questions from committee members? If not, thank you very much, both of you. Thank you. Thank you, Paul. Too. Paul, we didn't ask you to say much today, but I know the work product will be great. Eloise Anderson, Secretary of DCF. Eloise, welcome to the committee. And
sure, her mic is on. Good afternoon.
It's afternoon.
Representative Kirkman and Senator Coles and the rest of the committee, thank you for inviting us. I'd actually like to, before I answer your questions, I'd like to actually take a few minutes with myself and staff that I've brought to actually give you some of our viewpoint of one of who we are and what we believe we've done in this particular situation. So I want to start off with who the department is. I think we're a baby. We're 5 years old. Most of you know that. But we have three things that I think I'd like to talk to you about today. What's our principal role? I think the department, since I wasn't here, and as I look through who we are and what organizations are a part of our department, what our primary role is child safety and well-being. The other thing I would like to talk to you about is the new authority that we have of rate regulations and fraud audits. And then I'd like to speak a little bit to the complexity of our department. Child safety and well-being. DCF is an agency responsible for child welfare. We also have a couple other things in terms of economic stability for poor families and child care for poor families who work. But all of what we do is surrounded by children and families that have children. All the DCF work is related to protecting the safety of children. If you look at what we do in our child care program, it's around safety. If we look at what we do in our child welfare program, it's around safety. Just protecting children, youth, and families. I like to include youth because it has been missed in our mission, and I think when we say children, we say families. Youth is not really thought about, so we've included youth back in. Wisconsin Child Welfare System, as Representative Kirkman said, is a state-supervised, county-administered system except for Milwaukee. And in Milwaukee, we do exactly the same operations that the county does. There are only 14 other states that are county-run systems, so to kind of look at who we are, when I first got into state business, there were five of us, five county-run systems. There are now 14. There would be 15, but Indiana left and became a state-run system. DCF in Milwaukee and the county child welfare departments carry out locally a full range of child care welfare functions. DCF is responsible for oversight, standard and policy setting, and monitoring. Our specific roles of the child welfare department are receiving information. Most of you look at receiving information in terms of mandated reporters, but you don't have to be a mandated reporter to call in and say the child is either neglected or abused. Any citizen can do that, and they do. So that's one of our first responsibilities. Our second responsibility with that is to then go out and investigate those reports. We do two things in the investigation. We look to determine whether or not the allegations that have been made are real, and the second one is to do an assessment of the family, because usually these are around families that are being reported. The next thing we do is to determine what kind of supports and service that family may need. Our initial issue is to determine whether or not the child is safe in their own home, and when they're safe in their own home and we need to provide services, that's where we try to provide services first, and we only try to do that where possible. When we have to remove the child from its home, our next issue is then to arrange and define placement for our children. And because the least restrictive policy is our major policy, we look first to relatives and second to foster care. And then if that is not something that this child can need, then we go to other out-of-home care placements. We contract with out-of-home care providers and other service providers. The next thing that is done by the counties or by us in Milwaukee is to provide case management. And in the case management side, we arrange and assess for appropriate service to strengthen families and children. And then the last thing we try to do is manage the transition of a child to a permanent, safe, stable, and nurturing setting with either their birth family, with a relative, or with an adoptive family. So that's basically our overview of our child well-being system. the rate regulation and audit function. The legislature has placed an important new authority with DCF to find and bring out fraud and abuse of child welfare funds. Act 28 and Act 35 in the 9/11 biannual budget gave DCF the ability to implement a first ever rate regulation system. And within that rate regulation statute, we establish administrative rules. We commend the legislature for providing authority for a strong cost containment and program integrity. We are strongly committed to eliminating fraud, waste, and abuse in these and all our other programs. We have implemented the rate regulation initiative through the establishment of administrative rules. A specific statute and rules and determine the maximum rate each year. So before this, the department didn't have the ability to determine the rates, and a group home, a child placing agency, or RCC could determine their own rates, and they did. And so their rates were not uniform and consistent throughout the state. The department now has the authority to do audits of RCCs, group homes, and child placing agencies to determine whether the proposed rate is appropriate in the level of service provided, the qualifications of the staff, and the reasonable and necessary cost of providing those services. In 2011, in the biannual budget of 2011-13, Act 32 provided the department with additional staff resources to carry out the new rate regulations activities. And once we got those new staff in place, we moved on starting to do the audits, and as a result of that, we're here before you today. Prior to these measures, Act 335 and 28, rates changed by child placing agencies, groups, homes, and RCCs, and they varied widely. One of the things that one must remember is that the state agency has a responsibility for statewideness. The counties do not have that responsibility. So when we look at something, we're looking at how it looks like across the state, not how it looks at in one county or Milwaukee or Dane or Ashland. We're looking across the whole state. Each child placement agency in the past determined their own rates and would vary by county. We have diligently exercised this new audit oversight authority and pursued more detailed information and documentation, including on-site audits, which brings us to CCR. Through the department's implementation of the new tools, the department uncovered substantial allegations of misuse of taxpayer dollars at the CCR program. Based on these findings, the department revoked the CCR license on January 23rd. The department's findings are not related to care being provided by foster parents. I want to reiterate that and underline it. The foster parents are providing a good service, so this has nothing to do with the care of the children. We also believe that foster parents across the state provide a good service for our children. And so we like to always commend them for their work, because I know it is a view that we pay foster parents to do the work. We do not. We pay them to food, clothing, and shelter, but we don't. They're not professional foster care parents. When we remove the child from his or her family, our basic principle, as I indicated earlier, was least restrictive, which means that we look for relatives first, foster care second, and other out-of-home placements third and fourth. Foster parents are recruited and licensed either by a county or a child placing agency. CCR is a child placing agency. Counties typically recruit and license relatives and regular foster parents, and then they're responsible for the training. So the question that you're probably asking is, then why do we have CCR kinds of child placing agencies? And that's because child placing agencies license more complex foster parents for more complex children, children who have emotional and behavioral issues that need to be dealt with. A lot of our kids who come out of into our system have a lot of special needs, and they need foster parents who can then be involved in those special needs. When the child placement agency recruits and licenses a foster family, they are looking for foster families that can deal with these complex needs. And then they are responsible for extensive training and care of most of these foster families. Besides recruiting and licensing child placement agencies, they develop appropriate treatment plans for the child in consultation with the county's caseworker. They coordinate the delivery of services, and they must make at least 2 contact visits per month with the foster parent in order to monitor the placement. And then they also need to provide extensive training and respite care to the foster parent. Counties are responsible for case management of the child and the family. They have to assess and arrange appropriate services for the child in consultation with the child placing agency, identify and arrange support services designed to strengthen and stabilize the birth family, and develop a permanency plan. And the permanency plan has 2 functions. One, to determine whether the child can return home, and the second is to determine whether the child should go to a foster an adopted family. And we don't like to do permanency planning where we later on do the adoptive look. We'd like to do those simultaneously. When counties place a child through the CPA, which is a child placement agency, the county enters into a contract with that agency. The county is responsible for paying administrative rate to the agency and paying the foster care maintenance rate where the foster parents receive child care. The department's role in this is to oversee and provide policy guidance, practice standards, training and technical assistance, and monitor outcomes to achieve the statewide consistency and quality in child care services. The state and counties are also subject to federal laws as well as state laws. The department's role also includes regulating child welfare administrative agencies and facilities throughout the state and setting and enforcing licensing standards and monitoring entities' compliance. The state provides a mix of federal-state funding called the Child and Family Allocation to counties. And counties can and do, and I want to underline do, supplement the child and family allocation. So much of the funds that go into child welfare are county tax levy funds. So if any of the recruitment we would get from overpayment with an agency does not come back to the state. It goes back to the counties. There is very little state money at the county level that funds these programs. I would like to have both the Division of Safety and Permanency, which is where Child Welfare Service is housed, and the Division of Management Services, which is where our auditing function is housed, to also talk about in more in depth about these 2 divisions and what they do.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Freddie Bove, and I'm the administrator for the Division of Safety and Permanence in the Department of Children and Families. My division is responsible for oversight of the child welfare system, including the licensing of child welfare providers and the rate regulation initiative. Also here today from my division is Ron Hermes, who is the Bureau Director responsible for these program areas. As the Secretary just indicated, I'll provide some additional information to the committee on both the department's licensing functions and our rate regulation functions. So first, I'll talk about the licensing responsibilities. The department has the responsibility for setting and enforcing licensing standards for child placing agencies and the 3 types of residential settings that children in out-of-home care can use. Those 3 types of settings are group homes, residential care centers, which are also called RCCs, and shelters. The actual licensing standards are designed to protect the health and safety of the children served by these facilities. Unlike the recent rate regulation program, which I will describe in a few minutes, the licensing standards do not address in a detailed manner the financial activities of the facility. Again, they're focused on health and safety. Currently, we have a total of 194 licensed child placing agencies, group homes, residential care centers, and shelters. The licensing standards for each of these entities is published in administrative rules, which were issued with legislative approval. After a probationary period, the licenses for these entities are issued on a continuing basis. They don't have a specific expiration point. To continue a license, an entity does have to submit every 2 years a packet of information that has basic information in it about staffing patterns and other aspects of its operation. To monitor compliance with the licensing standards, we do have department licensing staff who conduct on-site monitoring visits to each facility at least once every 6 months. We also send the licensing staff out on an on-site visit if there's a specific complaint by a county or if there's a serious incident, like a serious injury to a child. Anytime the licensing staff does a visit, the staff typically inspect a sample of the child, foster parent, and personnel files to see if they meet the standards that are set in the licensing department's licensing standards. These include things like reviewing the education and work experience of staff, whether treatment plans have been completed for children, whether medical services have been provided in a timely fashion, whether the background checks and training of the foster parents have been undertaken, and how frequently that contact has been made between the child placing agency and the foster parents. In addition, when those on-site visits take place at a group home, an RCC, or a shelter, our licensing staff do a physical inspection of the facility to ensure that it meets safety standards. The department has a number of enforcement tools. If a licensed entity is found in non-compliance, the enforcement actions are determined based on the severity of the non-compliance, and they can range from everything from a warning letter to an imposed plan of correction to actual revocation. Next, I'd like to turn to the rate regulation program. So the department also now has responsibility for regulating the rates charged by these licensed entities through a different and relatively new statutory framework, and we call that the rate regulation program. Unlike the licensing standards that I just described, the rate regulation program addresses in detail the financial activities of the child welfare entities and is designed to promote the financial integrity of the program. As you just heard, the department was directed fairly recently in the 2009-11 biennial budget to begin a rate regulation initiative through the budget bill and through Act 335. The rate regulation program was initiated to address concerns about the service network for child welfare system. Prior to the 2009-11 biennium, the department and the counties faced the challenges of unpredictable and rising rates charged by providers. The child placing agencies and the residential facilities determined their own rates, and they were able to charge different rates across counties. The state lacked oversight or monitoring mechanisms. Due to the lack of accountability and transparency, the department and counties could not assess whether the rates that were charged were reasonable or not. The legislature recognized and responded to these weaknesses by supporting the rate regulation initiative. The purpose of that initiative is to provide transparency, statewide consistency, and a sound basis for rates paid to child placing agencies and the residential facilities to ensure that public resources are used in a cost-effective and appropriate manner. The rate regulation initiative really provided our department with new tools to both strengthen our understanding and enable us to control the costs of the child welfare providers, as well as to protect the integrity of payments. Based on the statutory authority that was granted. The department implemented the initiative through the establishment of administrative rules. With, again, legislative approval, emergency rules became effective in April 2011. Permanent rules became effective in January 2012. As set out in the statutes and rules, every year the department now receives reports from every RCC, group home, and child placing agency that has very detailed information about the staffing patterns in the entity, the costs, the services provided, the administrative staff, overhead expenses, and fixed costs. In addition, each entity now has to provide their audit to the department as well. Department now has the responsibility and capability to review that material. We establish a maximum rate every year that each type of entity can charge. We also look specifically at every provider and determine a maximum rate for each provider. Under the rate regulation initiative, as I just described, the department has been able for the first time to compile and analyze information on costs, services, and charges for all providers statewide in a comprehensive and detailed manner. As a result, we now have been able to set rates that reflect reasonable and necessary costs of providing services. Rate regulation is achieving its goals of establishing statewide consistency and transparency and ensuring that public funding is being used in a cost-effective and appropriate manner. With respect to transparency, the provider rates are published on the department's website on January 1st of each year. Every provider, every rate is published. With respect to consistency, providers must now charge the same rate for all public purchasers. So all counties now are charged the same rate. With respect to cost effectiveness, since rate regulation became effective in 2011, the annual increase in the maximum rate for these providers has been 2% or less. In contrast, in the period 1998 to 2009, prior to rate regulation, the average annual increase in rates for these entities was 6%. Rate regulation is also strengthening the integrity of payments in the child welfare system through the audit capabilities it provided. So at this point, I'd like to ask my colleague, Ron Hunt, who will provide more information on the auditing functions.
Thank you, Freddie. My name is Ron Hunt. I'm the administrator for our Division of Management Services at the department, and our Fiscal Integrity and Audit section, which is responsible for the CCR audit, calls under that division. So Eloise asked me to give you a high-level overview of what the audit function of the department is about. And so I think a good context is the size of the department. We have an annual operating budget of about $1.1 billion. Approximately 87% of the funds we receive go out in the form of aids to individuals or aids to localities. That means we obviously have a big audit function. We receive approximately 300 plus audits a year that reflects the amount of funds that we're granting out. Total dollar wise, that would be somewhat north of $300 million a year of funds that we allocate to local organizations and counties. About half of the audits we receive are in the world of child welfare, and the other half come from counties, W-2 agencies, refugee agencies, domestic abuse and violence organizations. For context, we said about a half of these are coming in the child welfare area. Your particular discussion on child placement agencies, we consider we have 24 child placement agencies, so that gives you a sense of the universe that we're looking at. The audit functions that we have, we require any agency that we contract or grant with more than $25,000 to provide an audit to us on an annual basis. The audits have to be completed in compliance with the state single audit guidelines and the appendices that are attached to them. Entities that receive greater than $500,000 a year also comply with federal OMB Circular A133. All our audits to be received by us have to be conducted by a licensed certified public accountant. The firm that they represent has to be licensed, and it has to have a positive peer review in the prior 3 years. So, purpose of an audit, it's the wrong group to explain this to, but the purpose of an audit is to express an opinion on the financials, statements of the organization, that it's fairly presented according to generally accepted accounting procedures. It assesses internal controls, and to the extent that it is in compliance with regulations and the laws that were, that apply to it. So our audit program is composed of two parts, both a desk audit and an active field review. Desk audits are received approximately 6 months at the end of a close of a fiscal year for a nonprofit organization or a proprietary organization. So an organization that has a fiscal year January to December, they would give us their audit in that July of the following year period. So there's that lag period that always happens. We review and log in all the audits that come in, of course. One of our criteria for continuing a relationship with an organization is that they are current on their audits. So organizations that fail to have an audit produced or provided to us on a timely basis, we typically don't contract with them for the next period. We also review the audit to make sure it conforms to all our compliance requirements. And then we also use that to take certain actions on collections or overpayments that have been identified by the auditor themselves. Finally, in part based on what we're seeing there, we also then refer that organization over to our field audit unit for consideration for an on-site review. So the second portion of our audit process is what I call our fiscal review program. These are audits that are conducted by DCF personnel. They're in depth. They are in basically an expansion on the annual audit that we receive by the organization. We go in and do a far larger and greater detail of testing there. Typically, they're on site. We also have the ability to review the audit papers that have been done at particular organizations. But given that we have limited number of staff, we also then have to establish some processes for who we select to have a fiscal review. We do use a risk assessment analysis, which considers a variety of information we received, both from audit reports, the finances of the organization itself, information we're hearing from program organizations, and the like. Because we have a variety of programs, we also want to make sure that we're just not concentrating on particular types, like just child placement agencies. So we want to make sure we have a variety of different types of programs we're looking at. We want to make sure that there's a geographic distribution of that, so we're not just concentrating in one part of the state. And we want to make sure we look at, obviously, what we've done in the past. So our monthly fiscal review cycle is we tend to tee up 2 to 4 organizations a month. We're trying to average around 4 is what we've been doing. Our current cycle, without any changes to it, which for the child welfare agencies, would be cover all child welfare agencies in a 3 to 5 year cycle. And it typically takes anywhere between 3 to 6 months to complete a review. The CCR example was much longer because it was a much more in-depth and much more complicated review. In addition to that formal process, we've also tried to put in place some proactive outreach and training so that we're having ongoing communications with the various organizations we contract with, trying to get their leadership to understand the purposes of the auditing program, trying to make sure that they understand what allowable costs are, good documentation, and the like. So that gives you a high-level overview of what the audit process is, and I think at this time we'll open it up for any questions you may have of us.
Okay, thank you very much. And did Mr. Hermes have a comment to you? Okay, just here to answer questions. What about records from, you've been around 5 years. Are the records available the department's records?
Department.
If the Audit Bureau wants to dig deeper before, I mean, these functions were happening in the main health and the main health agency before it was cut off as a separate agency. Are those records available going back a number of years?
I don't think the record keeping was cut off. I just think the department was switched.
So somewhere in your archives, you've got records. For example, this, the agency that precipitated this whole problem, CCR, they've been around 25 years, right? I find it hard to believe they suddenly became corrupt in 2009. I mean, we'll find out, but it just seems mysterious that, you know, your internal audit just found the problem in 2009. You know, what about all those other years? They were probably skimming us all those other times.
Well, I think you're going to have two, you're going to have an issue, is that only in one case, two cases, did CCR contract with the state. CCR's, most of their contract is with the counties. And so
right.
The question is whether the counties have records of that far. For Milwaukee, the Bureau of Milwaukee Child Welfare, and for our adoption program, there would be records for as long as they've been doing business with us, but that doesn't mean that they've been doing business with us for 25 years.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So I just want you to know that
somebody might
have it, but it may not be the department.
It might not be you.
The Department of Health and Family Services. It could very well be the counties in which you have to do this.
They're still operating right now, correct?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Where are they in the appeal process?
As I understand it, they have waived their right for a 30-day hearing, and I don't know where they are in the appeal process.
Does anybody here?
No. Secretary Anderson is correct. They've waived their right to a 30-day hearing, and it can go on until a hearing date is scheduled, and they are ready to go forward.
So that's a process that we set up in statutes that's given them.
That is correct.
Yes.
Okay. Are there any recommendations from you folks to maybe change that now so the next guy, we don't end up getting dragged out? I mean, we want to deal with...
I think one of the big issues that we have is that fact that we can revoke their license and wait, but they can still operate. I mean... You know, you look at us and say, why are they operating? And we look back at you and say, because
the statute.
That's what the statute says.
Right. So I'm looking for recommendations on how to change that. You want to think about that?
Yes.
Okay. What monies are still going from your agency to them?
Now, we send them for the programs in which they contract with BMCW and our adoption program, we send them monies for administrative care. We do not send them any more monies for the foster parents. We send the money to the foster parents directly. The counties are continuing to send them money for the administrative services, but we're sending foster care payments to the foster parents directly. So all they're getting now is money for the administrative arm of this.
Okay. Was there no way to find out that their salaries, which were outrageous, before this internal audit?
Ralph, you want to answer?
So the audit reports we had received prior to this were at a high-level summary level, so that you would say salaries, and it would be for the entire organization.
So
it was only when our staff...
Top two people, their salaries were buried in the context of their
records.
30 employees. Was it 30?
That's,
yeah, 30 employees.
Yes,
I thought it was a little less than that, but yeah, that's the
So that's all that
right.
Snuck by.
So it was only when we had access to general ledger accounts and stuff we could actually look at specific information.
And the same for all the other outrageous things.
Correct.
The cars.
Correct.
The trips. I mean, trips, how would that slip through to this?
When you look at the summary statements that we received, you would not see.
So you weren't looking at
generalized travel.
Here's an agency that's representing X number of counties and the number of kids that they're taking care of. You wouldn't. There were nothing. No signals would pop up saying, "Hey, this particular agency is costing, you know, whatever amount per kid. That's far more than the other agencies, which were much lower per kid."
So
something like that would trigger this.
So remember, the whole evolution of rate setting was occurring here beginning in 2010 or so. And that's when people started receiving the cost and service reports, which then started saying, what do we need to do about this? Which then led to the governor requesting additional staff to start managing. So this was an evolving process that as people got deeper into it, people got smarter and started making assumptions about how the dots could get connected, and that we started saying we need bodies to start going out and doing these things.
Now, you went after CCR. Did you have a tip that there was a problem there, or did you suspect something, or how did you decide to go after them? They were one of the first you went after.
Right. So we've gone through, I think, 11 agencies right now. And in putting that together, we took into a variety of things into account. Some of those things were size. CCR is a very, very large child placing agency. Some of it was input, thoughts, advice that we were getting from other folks, and some of it was just based on kind of our, like I said, our risk assessment that said this is an organization that we should look at sooner as opposed to later.
Some of the stories in the paper saying 200 kids, is my memory right when you say large organization?
That's what was in the paper. The numbers were more in the 130 range, I think.
How can that be large? That's a large agency.
So there's 24 child placing agencies in the state. Mm-hmm. In January, the total number of placed kids with those agencies was like 930 kids. So that's what I was trying to say earlier. I want to put this in context of the total dollars involved. So there might be these administrative fees that Secretary Anderson was talking to you about. You know, if you do the math real quick, $938.63 a day, you're talking $21 million, all funds, all state.
Okay. Questions from committee members? I knew Senator Vinehout was going to have one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron, I want to get the numbers straight in my head in terms of your functions right now, given your staffing levels. And I'm sure over the next couple months we'll be asking questions about whether you need more staff. But just so I have a feel for what system that you've set up now, you said that you've got 24 child placement agencies, total number of 930 children, and you're able to do an audit at about 2 to 4 organizations a month?
2 to 6.
Around 4. And they take approximately 6 months, did I hear that right?
3 to 6.
And they take 3 to 6 months. And that you're on a cycle right now to do all 24 agencies within...
No, we're on a cycle to do all child welfare agencies.
So that's like the 194 that Freddie talked about.
Right, so we're averaging 4 a month, that's 50 a year, that's 150 in a 3-year cycle.
Okay, so that gets you to 194 and 4, yeah, roughly 4 to 5. Okay, so have you had any contact with other states about how they do the oversight function? Do you know if this is about average or?
So when, go back, the department was formed in 2008. This mm-hmm. was one of the original, the issues of rate setting was one of the original issues that the department started tackling. Everyone remembers that big economic downturn in the fall there, bunch of freezes on positions. We went out and we tried to recruit a specific individual who had extensive fraud investigation background to give us insight into that. We brought that person on in 2010, mm-hmm. later than we had really hoped for. And that was one of the challenges that we gave this person. We said, go look at other states and tell us what they're doing, assess what we're doing today, and put together a plan for us so that we can be effective in this area. The response of that review is, boy, most states aren't doing anything. They're doing desk reviews like we are.
Mm-hmm.
Our desk review system is not adequate because you're only looking at pieces of paper that people are giving you.
Mm-hmm.
That we need to gear up for lack of a better word, a field auditing staff or an investigative auditing staff that can go out and do the more in-depth reviews.
Mm-hmm.
The other point the person brought to us was, when other states do it, history says these are one-time events. There's a big hullabaloo, there's a big issue, you go out and you do things, and then it kind of drifts away. So if we're going to do something, let's do a repeatable process that we can go out and sustain year after year after year. And that was the task then we put before us. We brought our first two field auditors on board in October of 2011. This was position authority the department had previously. And then the 11-13 biennial budget authorized us two more field auditors, and they came on board in January of 2012. So our fiscal integrity unit right now consists of six people, a supervisor who also does investigative work, and then five auditor staff, one of which basically maintains the 300 audits that we get a year. And so we have four staff who are out in the field doing reviews.
I want to thank you for your work, all of you. I think it's interesting that we're following up on something that you have discovered, and frequently we're in a bit of a different position with the agencies, and at this point we're kind of following you, and I don't think that's a bad thing, but I think it shows the work that you've done, and I appreciate that.
Representative Marklein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the CPA firm for CCR provided a copy of the CCR provided a copy of that audit report to the agency, and that audit report is required to be done in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards and also follow the provider agency audit guide.
Yes, it is.
And it did. And it did follow?
I'd prefer not to talk about that at this point.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
That's it. Other questions from committee members? If not, thank you all very much. Is there anyone else interested in testifying on the potential audit of the foster care program? Okay, if not, we're going to recess the hearing and go into executive session. Clerk will call a roll for executive session.
Senator Coles.
Yes.
Senator Darling. Senator Lozick.
Here.
Senator Beinhout.
Here.
Senator Lehman. Representative Kirkman.
Here.
Representative Marklein.
Here.
Representative Nygren.
Here.
Representative Richards.
Here.
Representative Sargent.
Here.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Beinhout.
Mr. Lehman is in another hearing right now, Senator Lehman, and I just ask that the page give that hearing a call because he wanted to be here.
I just sent down a page to him.
Okay.
Where is that?
Yep.
Is there any...
thank you.
So he's on his way, sure?
No, I think we need to let him know.
Okay. What is the process, Anna? Can he vote if we had vote after? If we voted on it now, can his vote be included?
He can vote any time before adjournment of the executive session.
Oh.
So if you want, you could hold the roll open and wait for adjournment, delay adjournment of that session.
Okay.
I believe the page went to get him right now.
Yeah. Okay. In the meantime, are there any other questions for our auditor, Joe Christman, his staff? Is anybody interested in bringing Joe up and asking additional questions? You do? Okay. Joe, I guess there is a question. Senator Darling, so all those questions from Senator Beinhout are starting to rub off over on this end, and so there's going to get me more questions down here.
Thinking about the use of your time, we all want to find more program integrity. We all want to find more taxpayers' dollars going into the purposes of the program. My question is, you are really, really busy, and we have a list of some other audits we'd like to do. Is there any way to split the question so that knowing that the governor started a fraud and abuse commission and some of that has been implemented, we made the investment in the last budget to put more teeth and resources into fraud and abuse because we were concerned that hundreds of... millions of dollars were taken out of this effort across the board in the budget during the last administration. We made another reinvestment. So how can we best use your time? Do we need to audit all the programs of the foster care program? I mean, or do we need to zero in on what we're most interested in? Or maybe I'm most interested in the issue of the fraud and abuse, and are we positioned to make the best investment for the best outcomes. If others have concerns about the overall licensing issues, you know, that's your prerogative. But I don't know that's what people got concerned about originally. I think people were concerned that there were providers who were scamming the system. So I guess my question is, do we want a full-blown audit on the Department of Children and Families, which, in my opinion, is going to take the auditor in one direction, or are we interested in maybe the last two questions, which are more into the program integrity part? Do you know what I'm trying to ask?
The scopes are generated by our independent audit bureau, in this case Joel Christman and his staff, based on the controversy out there and the questions that Representative Kirkman and myself asked him. So, I mean, this, I don't intrude on, the development of this scope. They developed this scope, but Auditor Christman, you want to...
Sure. Let me try to frame a little bit more about what I would envision we would do. As outlined in the four dots that are here before you, I would categorize all four of those particular lines of inquiry as fitting under a fairly narrow focus in the audit effort that would look at financial oversight and not agency-wide, but particular to child-placing agencies. So in the comparison between a full-blown audit of the department in its entirety, this is more focused in a particular aspect of its operation and for a particular grouping of providers. So to that extent, I think those four points are more interrelated along that narrower focus than the first two perhaps being perceived as a larger effort and the second two as a smaller effort.
Senator Darling, follow up.
Thank you. Well, then, could we zero in on how well they are set up for detecting fraud and abuse, which people were really upset about at the provider and at the recipient end? Because I think there have been other audits that have zeroed in on the participants' fraud. Could we add that to the scope of the audit? Because I think that's what we're really in. At least I thought we were interested in finding, what can we do to prevent, as you put it, prevent the situation from happening again. How are they set up now? We heard a little bit about what's happened since the budget investment. What more do we need to do?
The description, I think, Senator Darling, in my mind, fits within the category of the committee's inquiry around how questions, how are they set up, how is that working, which then informs some of the what I was describing before as being the particular points of what is happening, what's actually going on at those agencies. So that process question, I think you've certainly communicated to me that's part of your interest in having us do this work.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Beinhout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to support what Senator Darling suggested, and I think that she and I share the feeling that we want to be able to use the auditor's resources in the best possible way, and there are so many aspects of state government that need attention or that may need attention in the future that we want to make sure that we're making the appropriate decision. And it seems like there is a process in place. There were staff that were given. It's just beginning to work, and we're seeing the fruits of some of its labor. Now, that doesn't make anything that we've seen in the news make us feel any better about it, but the fact that it's come forward from the agency itself, I think, is indicative that something somewhere in this process is working. And so I guess I want to underscore what you said, and I think I'm hearing from the auditor that we're all in agreement that we want to make sure we want to answer the question of how is it working, and it may be that it's working adequately, and maybe it's not. Maybe we need more additional resources. But I guess I too want to make sure that we're not doing a full-blown audit of the whole entire department and the program evaluation of that department. But I do think that we're in agreement on that too. I I hope. Does that make...
Yes.
Does it seem like we're all in the same, in looking at this in the same way?
Other questions from...
And I was impressed, I will add, to the committee. I was impressed by the work that's being done right now in the agency.
Yet we're all troubled. How could this happen?
Right. But the question is now, how do we prevent it from happening again? And do we have adequate monitoring, monitoring process in place?
And whether we have to, in every case, to catch one of these cases of wrongdoing, do we have to do an audit? Or are there other ways to catch it that would prevent it beforehand?
As much as we can. Like a risk assessment. I mean, that would be, risk assessment tool is a good idea.
Representative Richards.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I agree with Senator Darling also. I think it's a good idea to limit the scope of the audit based on the financial problems that came up. That's what really prompted the review. And I'm wondering just procedurally, as a committee, how do we limit the scope of the proposed audit? Do we need a formal amendment, or how do we go forward with that?
I don't know. The auditor is saying he doesn't need that he feels it's already sufficiently limited.
That's correct. I do believe that in the scope statement we have used before the dots, the description, this is an audit of financial oversight of child placing agencies. So from my perspective, I'm clear on what we would begin to do. If there's anything else you'd like me to speak to about that issue, I certainly can. But an amendment of the scope is not a necessary process.
Other questions from committee members?
I move the scope.
Co-chair Kirkman moves the scope, and I would second it. Clerk will call a roll.
Senator Coles.
Aye.
Senator Darling.
Aye.
Senator Lozick.
Aye.
Senator Vinehout.
Aye.
Senator Lehman.
Aye.
Representative Kirkman.
Aye.
Representative Markline.
Aye.
Representative Nygren.
Aye.
Representative Richards.
Aye.
Representative Sargent.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much, everybody from the agency and Audit Bureau. Look forward to the final product there. The other item on our agenda today is the introduction and public hearing of LRB 1099/2 and LRB 1097/2. is to explain what's going on here. Joe will come up. First, we're going to have a legislative council discussion of the bill, and then Joe Christman will come up and explain why we're doing this. So, Anna, do you want to? These are bills that will back us off essentially from some of the routine audits that have been done. That'll free up some of the time of the Audit Bureau. It's essentially.
We're going to. Take a vote on introduction and then we'll move.
Oh, we have to.
I'll move introduction of the legislation.
I'm sorry. I missed a spot.
Yeah.
Right.
I move introductions of LRB 1099/2 and 1097/2.
Yeah, pardon me. Thanks for catching that. I'd second it. Okay. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Coles?
Aye.
Senator Darling?
Aye.
Senator Lozick?
Aye.
Senator Vinehout?
Aye.
Senator Lehman?
Aye.
Representative Kirkman.
Aye.
Representative Markline.
Aye.
Representative Nygren.
Aye.
Representative Richards.
Aye.
Representative Sargent.
Aye.
Okay.
Okay.
So, Anna. Okay. We're gonna adjourn the other public hearing and the executive session, and now we're going to have a description. Now we're going to have a description of the bill in front of us by legislative counsel.
Okay, these two bills are identical, so I will refer to them together as the bill. And my understanding is that they will be given bill numbers shortly. The bill makes various changes to specific audit requirements that are required under current law. First, it repeals provisions for various one-time audits that have already been completed and were for which a date certain was provided for completion of an audit and that work has been done. Second, for certain audit requirements that are required to be conducted periodically under current law, the bill replaces the specific timeline under current law for the completion of those audits with a direction that such audits and programs will be audited at the discretion of the state auditor or at the direction of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. Again, those are certain audits, not every audit, certainly in the statute for which there's a periodic completion requirement. Third, under current law, the Audit Bureau must keep certain information confidential, but current law does not specifically require the Audit Bureau to keep information that is received as part of an investigation from their hotline, the Fraud, Waste, and Mismanagement Hotline, confidential. The bill adds that confidentiality requirement. Next, the bill requires the Audit Bureau to conduct an annual financial audit of the UW system. The bill also authorizes the Audit Bureau to charge the State Fair Park Board and the UW system for the reasonable cost of annual financial audits performed of those entities. And finally, the bill authorizes the State Auditor and the Audit Bureau employees to examine state tax returns to the extent necessary to conduct an audit.
Co-Chair Kirkman, do you have any comments about this bill at this point?
I just want to say this has been a work in progress for several years. Before I was the co-chair, and I know Senator Vinehout was the co-chair with Representative Barca, our former state auditor, Jan Mueller, had a discussion about trying to update and modernize our statutes relating to the Audit Bureau. And again, this is something, you know, that we have worked on under previous co-chairs and now ourselves to really try to bring our statutes up to date. And, you know, one of the one is about the vault. There's no vault anymore where, you know, he's making sure that the cash on hand in the vault matches the books. I mean, again, it's just modernizing our statutes. Hopefully, again, freeing up some more time for Joe to work on things that as they come before us and are needed, you know, audits that have been completed and done should be off the statutes, again, so we can thin up some of those statute books and concentrate on the things that are before us as, you know, we get, you know, topics like the UWHR system and foster care, you know, where, again, we need to act quickly on those things. Not to say other things are important. With regards to the UW, again, it's just putting it in statute, something, a practice that's always been done, but again, now putting it in statute that they follow up, and again, it's something that the state auditor has done, again, and just clarifying that. So again, I want to just say thank you to Senator Vinehout, because again, we had worked on this, and we were so close to getting it introduced at the end of last year, and felt to wait to put this forward, and now Senator Coles has picked it up right where, you know, we left off, and again, now going forward, I think it's just a good product that several people have had their eyes at and look at, and again, I look forward to this future discussion.
Right, and Auditor Crispin wanted to step up again and see if anybody has any questions. Basically, what we're trying to do here is loosen up, you know, give you a little more flexibility to not do some things that are not critical, and have more capacity for the kind of things that the committee wants to do going forward. Any questions? Senator Lozick has a question.
I recall discussions in the past where it was a requirement of the Bureau to audit every agency or a facet of every agency once every 5 years. Does that still exist? Is that part of this at all? Or just maybe give us a little bit of background on what the law is as it relates to the Audit Bureau.
Certainly. Thank you for the question, Senator Lozick. Let me step back, and then I'll answer that question. As you think, as the Audit Committee, it's a friendly audience for us to talk about the Audit Bureau and the scope of its work, but I'm not wanting to assume knowledge that might not come before you. You're most familiar with the opportunity like what you engaged in today, where a scope statement comes to you, you deliberate on the scope statement, and you vote to direct us to undertake certain work. That's one of the processes that can bring the Audit Bureau to bear on a particular topic or subject. The Fraud, Waste, and Mismanagement Hotline that has come up is also another avenue of pursuit, fairly new for us since 2008, that also can bring the Audit Bureau's resources to examine a particular topic. But in addition to that, there are a number of statutory requirements, of which some of these are addressed in this bill, that also signaled legislative priority. And so when we think about how we use Audit Bureau resources, if we have a statutory requirement, we fulfill it because that requirement is, of course, in statute. So working from that perspective, it does have an effect on how many assignments we can accept from the committee in its discretion, and also how many eyes the state auditor could initiate on my own. So if that's the context for how we move forward, there are a couple of important points I would like to make about the bill in relation to your question. One is that the Bureau itself takes no position on the bill. We are your staff. We work for you as a nonpartisan service agency, and so whatever your choices are about how we use our time, we will fulfill them. And so in that way, we've served as a consultative resource to the co-chairs in putting the bill draft together for you that's before you. Secondly, it's important to remember that the scope of the Audit Bureau's authority is broad. That is to say, the state auditor in statute is given access to any record that exists in state government with or without notice, which is a very broad access. The important point as you debate the bill and think about its elements to remember is that specific enumeration in the statute is not a requirement in order for an audit to occur. So some of those particular pieces that have been lifted up in Anna's memo to you, the elimination of them from statute in no way reduces the scope of the Bureau's authority over any entity in state government, particularly those created by you, the legislature. So that would be point two. Point three, Senator Lozick, relates to your question, which was a timing consideration. And in the memo that Council summarized for you on page two of that document, under the section elimination of specific timelines for certain audit requirements, the first thought does speak to that particular requirement that you're remembering. Every State Department, Board, Commission, independent agency, or authority at least once every 5 years. So in the bill draft, the proposal would be to make that timeline less of a trigger and to instead use the committee's discretion or the state auditor's discretion to determine the frequency with which those various entities are audited.
Okay. Other questions? Senator Vinod? I'm sorry. Senator Lozick, continuation.
Thank you, Co-Chair. So we are removing that once every 5 year requirement that an agency be audited or some facet of an agency at least once every 5 years. This bill would remove that.
As I understand the bill draft would remove the 5 year requirement and make it subject to the discretion of you, the committee, or the state auditor.
Okay. Right. Does the LAB recommend? Do you have a comfort level with that? I understand you take no position on the bill, but are there agencies that you feel you have had to go in and do a perfunctory audit just because the statute says you have to go in there, so you look for something minor to do because you don't believe the entity doesn't need to be audited?
I think that it provides a way to think about audit resources, and let me try to frame it this way. You heard a description from the Department of Children and Families today about using risk assessment models to assess how to move forward, and we certainly do that at the Audit Bureau in every audit that we engage in, but also how we choose to spend our time. So the idea to say that we would visit every board, commission, independent agency, or authority on a particular timeline is a way of signaling priority, but is it also the best and highest use to communicate potential risk? So with the idea of the Audit Bureau's authority being broad, how important is it to you, the legislature, to create a cycle or send a message about a cycle in comparison to the discretion of the state auditor to use other mechanisms, one of which would be risk assessment, to determine how best to deploy our resources?
Okay.
Co-Chair Kirkman has a response.
I just wanted to follow up because I think the CAFR and the work that the Audit Bureau does with the CAFR, which touches all state agencies, definitely gives the auditor the ability to find those things, and that's how we found the HR question. That's how we found the $3 million last year in the health authority, and those ongoing reports that, again, DOA does first, but then again the state auditor looks at it, I think goes to what that previous requirement of every 5 years. I think that's why I think this is important. Is we need to give Joe the flexibility so when he does find something in the CAFR, he can bring it to our attentions, and then we can go forward and say this is a big deal, we need to expound on it and require another scope of something, or, you know, in the UW or in the authority from last year, that was handled through the budget process. We were able to make some changes with what you found in the budget. So again,
I think giving us more flexibility as an audit committee, I think, is, you know, is really important. Sometimes I know when I'm out talking to constituents, they know that I'm, you know, on this committee and have been a part of it. I've talked about it enough. People bring up little suggestions, and sometimes I give them the fraud hotline number because I know that's how we can trigger it much quicker than us even doing a scope. So.
Okay. Senator Vinehout.
I completely support what Representative Kirkman just said, and I wanted to share my understanding of the functions of audit, which has been evolving in my role in the committee. When I first began, I really didn't understand the breadth of the work that you do that we never see here in committee. And it isn't that we can't see it, it's just that you continue to do it on an ongoing basis, and sometimes it comes before the committee, and sometimes it continues to function in sort of our background, but as paramount for you. And I think about, Senator Lozick, the work that's done on something like the single audit, as well as the comprehensive annual financial audit of the state. And in both of these cases, the single audit, we're dealing with federal funds, the CAFRA, we're dealing with all funds. In both of these cases, the breadth of state government is examined from a financial perspective. And from this sometimes emerges other issues, both financial and program evaluation. So there continues to be a broad oversight that is followed on a regular basis that meets several different requirements from the state. So just because it appears in this particular way in this document doesn't mean that it isn't already happening and will continue to happen in the ways that it has in the past. I think what happens now is that we have many things that come before us, many crises that we need additional information about, and sometimes we're faced with the difficult conundrum of having to choose between A and B, and both A and B are very important. And if we were able to free up the Audit Bureau with removing some of these timing issues, it gives us the opportunity to go in-depth in a way that we might not have had the resources to do in the past. And I think that's, for me, that's why I was originally involved in the bill, and I certainly thank the co-chairs for bringing it forward today. I thank former State Auditor Jan Mueller for bringing it to my attention, and certainly my former co-chair, Representative Barca, for helping to embark on this work, which was now, you know, almost, well, 3 years ago.
Barca embarked? I mean, that's
Barca embarked,
that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
He and I together on a ship, and here we have this bill
as
now.
Usual, it's well said.
Thank you. Thank you. But I do appreciate Senator Lozick's concern, and I wanted her to know that, because when you first read this, it certainly would be my reaction is, whoa, what are we doing? Isn't this what audit is supposed to be doing? And the answer is absolutely yes, and it will continue to do that through a number of different vehicles.
Right.
And I don't know if State Auditor would like to contribute any to my thinking.
He's agreeing. Representative Richards.
Sure. I notice on page 2 of the Legislative Council summary that one of the audits that apparently was completed was a examination of the results of standardized tests in the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program. And I'm wondering, do we have any ongoing audit function for the Parental Choice Program, especially now that it's being proposed to be expanded throughout the state?
Thank you, Representative Richards, for the question. That reference that you see before you was a 5-year longitudinal requirement for the Bureau to every year examine test score data from a group of researchers who were performing an assessment on the performance of the students in the Choice Program. Once we completed that work last summer, there is no ongoing requirement relating to Choice for the Audit Bureau.
Okay, so you had an ongoing 5-year audit requirement, but there is no longer any sort of audit requirement. Obviously, the chairs can bring it up at any time, but we're stripping that out of the statute, so that expired, and we're not renewing it.
That's correct, and I would want to make sure there was understanding that the nature of that requirement when it was in statute was to review test score data and analyses performed by another researcher. It was not framed as a program evaluation or a financial audit of the Choice schools.
Okay. Then on page 4, it says that your agency will have an annual audit of the UW system. So given the number of specific timeline audits that are now being deleted under this bill. Is there any other part of state government that has a regularly scheduled audit in law like the UW system will have?
Certainly, thank you. That's a very important point to have clear in the committee's mind as well. The bill does not adjust or eliminate by any means all statutory requirements for audits. Those that are before you do reflect some judgment about how and what should stay. So there are other statutory enumerations with particular timelines attached. I can reference them for you, but they also appear in Appendix 1 of our recent biennial report, which would be a good way to look at time overall for those statutory requirements, some of which are annual, some of which are biennial, every 3 years, etc.
Co-Chair Kirkman.
Can I just add some that we always get is Wisconsin Public Radio and Public TV. Again, those just came across our desk. Those are required because we receive federal dollars on those. Again, usually very vanilla type an audit. In my time on the committee, I've never had a question arose from those audits, but again, have to be done because the federal government requires it.
Other kinds of larger audit efforts that would be relevant to your question include things like the State of Wisconsin Investment Board, where there are several $1 billion in assets that are at play. We examine that on a statutorily required schedule. The legislature, in the creation of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, established a statutory requirement for us that's biennial in nature. So again, there are several different kinds of audits that still will have timing requirements attached to them.
Other questions from committee members? Senator Vinod.
Just a brief question. Why is it important that we keep the integrity of this bill as it moves forward in the process?
Would you speak to the definition of integrity? Meaning?
Why is it important that, I know the answer to this question, I just want to bring this up, that we keep the bill as it is before us? Why is it important that we push back as much as we can as members of the audit committee on other members of the legislature that would like to add other requirements for the LAB to this bill as it goes through the, hopefully goes through the House and the Assembly and the Senate?
Senator Vino, I think the answer to your question that you set up here would be consistent with the co-chair's comments. The spirit of the bill, as they have put it forward, is to look at ways to use the Bureau's resources most effectively and to create some additional flexibility for you, the committee, in making determinations about how and where to spend time. So as additional requirements are added to the statute, that would have the effect of reducing the overall effect of the bill itself.
And this, I might add, this has been a struggle, no matter who is co-chair, it's been a struggle with other entities that want to, how shall I say, give direction to the Audit Bureau, not necessarily through the Audit Committee. So it's important that the Audit Committee retain the oversight of the Audit Bureau, and to the extent that other entities are creating direction, that really takes away from the role of the Audit Committee. And I don't know how to stress that more, but I would ask all of my colleagues to work with their colleagues to maintain the integrity of this bill as it goes forward through the process.
Right.
And I think it'll be a temptation by all of our colleagues to add things to it, but that doesn't mean that they can't request an audit, because of course there is a process for requesting an audit.
Right. We've introduced it now as a committee bill. You know, if there's anyone else that wants to testify, that's great. I'll get to John. I just want to point out the process. We're not going to vote on this today. We're going to vote on this another time. So if we vote this out at another time, this will be a committee bill. And right, we have to prevent Senator Vino from this being a Christmas tree. Yeah. Otherwise, we won't achieve the goal we're trying to get here. I think most of us want to, Joe's staff, to be have the opportunity to do some other things and not be bogged down with all this routine stuff. So, Representative Richards.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it appears we've already hung one ornament on the tree with the UW audit that's now on there every year. And I'm just wondering what the thought was. If we're trying to streamline the process, why are we adding a regular annual audit into the fold here?
Well, I think, and I don't know if Joe wants to elaborate, but I think we had that discussion as we crafted this bill, because he's already doing a look, because that's already happening. It's just putting it in statute so that I've lost the word.
Sure, let me attempt to explain. It does not, the audit requirement in the bill would not represent new audit effort on the part of the Bureau. We currently do an annual financial audit of the UW system so that it may publish its own standalone financial statements. We do so at its request, even though they are also part of the comprehensive annual financial report. This would say, rather than having the UW request that effort, it's just simply establishing on a scale not inconsistent with some of the other agencies I mentioned, like SWIB or those REDIC components, that an entity as large as UW may also be statutorily directed to have that audit performed. So it's not I would not want you to think of it as a new audit requirement. It's more, how does the assignment come to us? Rather than at the UW's request, this would be as directed by you in statute.
Representative Markling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As an auditor, I encourage us to support this. The whole audit profession is going to risk-based assessment, risk-based auditing, to allocate our resources where there's the highest probability of error, irregularities, in that sort of thing. Auditor judgment, and and I respect your judgment, your professional judgment, and the judgment of our agencies as well. And so, I think this reinforces that step. It's the way the entire profession is going. And, it allows you more flexibility. Things change from year to year. Their inherent risks change from year to year, and it allows you the flexibility to identify what you believe to be the low-hanging fruit in any particular year.
Okay. Other questions from committee members? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on this bill? If not, co-chair's intention would be to bring this up at a future date for a vote. So, thank you very much. We're adjourned.